The following show is closed caption for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
906. Not the onion. Not the onion. What you are about to hear is not a headline from the satirical onion. I won't tell you where it's from right away, but it is not the onion. Here is the story. As soon as my stupid computer here stops screwing around with me. The headline is, Harry Reid, media covering for Republicans. That is not the Onion. That is from Politico. Indeed. The media are covering for Republicans in their political coverage, according to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. How can a self-caricature become any more a self-caricature than what he already is? Asked by MSNBC's Chuck Todd, of course he would say this on MSNBC, in an interview aired Thursday, why he won't allow Republican amendments to an energy bill, Reid shot back that reporters won't call things the way they actually exist. That would be the way he sees them. Most reporters do see things the way he sees them, but apparently 99% isn't enough for this one percenter. By the way, you know how rich Harry Reid is? Anyway, 99%, and by the way, he got way richer in the time he's been in the Senate. And when Todd brought up an amendment from Senator David Vitter, a Louisiana Republican, that would gut federal health care contributions to lawmakers and Capitol Hill staffers, Reid reprimanded his interviewer. Don't be playing his game. Oh, by just asking you a question. You know why, don't you? Because he was on MSNBC and he couldn't believe that he got anything that even remotely resembled a difficult question. Reid has bristled at any suggestion by the media this year that he's responsible for the dearth of amendment votes in the Senate, telling Politico to get a brain when asked about gridlock in March. See, even now, they're even to the point where they're marginalizing their friends. This is how desperate they are. Now they even have to marginalize those who are, for the most part, on their side. And by the way, yesterday, when I read the Henninger piece where he blamed President Obama for leading the marginalization charge on the right, I don't disagree with that. But boy, you have to put Harry Reid in there, something I did not mention yesterday. You have to put Harry Reid in there. Actually, I did bring it up with the Koch brothers, Koch brothers, Koch brothers, Koch brothers, Koch brothers, Koch brothers, and on and on and on. On Thursday, Todd brought up many of the most common GOP complaints about Reid's leadership, that the Democratic leader won't consider Republican amendments, that he's watered down the committee process, and that he won't allow his members to cut deals. But to each point, Reid deflected blame and said it's Republican filibusters that have ruined the Senate, that he's actually strengthened the committee system, and that he loves deal cutters. Toward the end of the interview, Todd pressed Reid on whether Democrats will bring him back as their leader next year. The Nevada Democrat brought up all the times the media have wrongly predicted the demise of the Senate majority. You have proven us wrong. I don't bet against Harry Reid anymore, Todd said. Obviously, your political acumen is as good as anybody's. So he got a big smushy butt kiss like that at the end. And he still insists. It's so ridiculous. That's enough of that. All right. I want to get in detail on this topic to start this hour. I received an email, and actually someone here in the office brought this up to me, and that's why I'm doing this topic. I received an email today, and I noticed something when I was at the Republican State Convention. There is another one of those movements within the conservative movement that illustrates that what continues to be the current mindset of the conservative movement is the grass is always greener. You can throw out there whatever candidates you want, mention whatever candidates you want as Republican contenders, and the response to the conservative base is going to be, No. Remember the old Andy Griffith ad for Ritz crackers? What are you hungry for when you don't know what you're hungry for? And the answer was a Ritz cracker. Great campaign, by the way. In other words, when you feel like having something but you can't decide what, have a Ritz. That's a brilliant campaign. I don't know how many crackers it sold, but in his folksy fashion, Andy Griffith did it very, very well. Conservatives are hungry. They're just not sure what they're hungry for. Is it Scott Walker? Is it Chris Christie? No. Is it Bobby Jindal? No. And it always tends to be something that's not currently on the buffet. Mike Pence is still in the kitchen. Why don't you bring Mike Pence out here? Let's try that. And what happens is once it's on the table, its shelf life evaporates rather quickly. The item that they really wish would be put on the table, on the buffet table, is Dr. Ben Carson. In fact, there is a draft Dr. Ben Carson for President PAC. I received an email from a regular listener to the show, all excited about it. Conservatives all over the country are all excited about Dr. Ben Carson. The draft Dr. Ben Carson PAC had a booth, or whatever you want to call it, a presence at the state Republican convention last weekend. Let's examine this, and then I'm going to take your thoughts on this. Why? Why is there all of this excitement about a candidate that they, a potential candidate, he's not a candidate, why do they want him in? In the CPAC straw poll, he came ahead of Scott Walker, Chris Christie, and who else? Who else did he come ahead of? But he was, I believe he finished third. Why are conservatives so quickly, so ready to cast their lot with a guy who hasn't been vetted and a guy they don't really know? Well, there is a piece that was back in Red State in March. I want to share some of this with you. It's by John Hayward at Red State. This is back in March. Dr. Ben Carson came in third on the CPAC straw poll for president, making him the not Paul, not Cruz winner. Not to sound flippant, but that's a significant position since the top two spots were pretty much preordained. Run through a mental list of all the folks Dr. Carson beat for the bronze medal, and you see why it matters, even if you don't place a huge amount of faith in straw polls this far out from the election. Thing is, we're really not that far out from the election, not for any candidate who wants to get serious. In fact, the hour's growing late. Presidential campaigns are massive undertakings. Hopefully, the 2012 race permanently shattered the illusion of an outsider sweeping in from nowhere, whirling across the ballroom floor to pick up the nomination, and gliding smoothly into the White House. It doesn't work that way. It will never work that way. Assembling money and support for a winning bid is serious business indeed. Even if the candidate has a skeleton-free closet and a natural gift for avoiding self-destructive mistakes on the campaign trail, the resources to sustain 50 state campaigns in both primaries and the general election take years to assemble. Not even Mitt Romney did it right, and he got started very early in the game, bringing both personal wealth and formidable management skills to the task. The important lesson here is that 2014 is actually very late in the game for anyone to lay the groundwork for a 2016 bid. So if Dr. Carson wants to play, it's time to start lining up pieces on his side of the board. His assets include a well-deserved reputation for great intelligence and compassion, plus a unique charisma. People just plain like the man, including people don't entirely agree with him. His CPAC speech was a rambling affair in which he just wanted to get a few things off his chest. The audience ate it up like candy and responded with completely unforced wails of dismay when Carson noticed he was running out of time. Every candidate wishes he had a bottle full of what Ben Carson brews every time he steps up to the podium. But natural charisma and intelligence aren't enough in politics. Issues and positions matter too, especially in the Republican Party, which, to both its credit and frustration, is far more serious about its core issues than Democrats are. As long as money gets spent, taxes go up, and the government gets bigger, Democrats can hound out enough lollipops to keep their coalition together. Even their livelier internal disputes can be smoothed over with a billion or two in promises. And the left is very comfortable with concealing party ideology to protect candidates with views that its electorate finds nominally unpalatable, such as the absurd fiction of the pro-gun Democrat or the all-but-extinct pro-life Democrat. Republican voters, on the other hand, allow for much more limited rhetorical flexibility with their most sensitive issues, especially gun control. And that's where Ben Carson runs into a bit of tough sledding, because he has expressed some sympathy for gun control efforts. This led to a fair number of "nice man, but I could never vote for him president, vote for him for president" assessments from conservatives. Carson hasn't actually said all that much on the topic until now. Most of the deal-breaker response is based on his response when Glenn Beck asked if ownership of semi-automatic weapons should be permitted. Carson replied, "It depends on where you live. I think if you live in the midst of a lot of people, and I'm afraid that the semi-automatic weapon is going to fall into the wrong hands, I'd rather you don't have it." Okay, that has concerned a lot of people. Late last month, Politico did a piece, "Who is Dr. Ben Carson?" I will summarize it. He's an intelligent, charismatic man that holds a lot of positions that I agree with based on what I've heard. Now, of course, he soared to conservative rock star status. He had retired after 3 decades of neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. He then, 10 feet from President Obama, criticized Obamacare and said a lot of other things conservatives liked at the prayer breakfast. Let's be honest. That's still about all we know about him. Now, with proper vetting and talking serious issues, including foreign policy, that's where Herman Cain imploded. Herman Cain didn't know anything about foreign policy. He was a fraud in that regard as a candidate. Here's the way I see it, and I'm willing to open this for calls. Here's why right now I think he gets a lot of excitement. He said things that I'm sure made President Obama uncomfortable and said them a few feet from President Obama. 2, he's anybody else. And conservatives continue to want the toy, the shiny new object, or the buffet dish that's not on the table. Once it gets on the table, they're on this quixotic quest to keep finding something other than the offering that's already there. And 3rd, and let's be honest about this, he's black. Many conservatives feel that that levels the race card playing field if they have a black candidate. I'm not saying Ben Carson wouldn't be a good candidate. I'm not saying he would. I'm saying I don't know. I'm saying you don't know. Just because he's an outsider doesn't make it a good thing. So I would throw this out to you. What makes him a better candidate right now than Scott Walker? What makes him a better candidate than Chris Christie? What makes him a better candidate than Bobby Jindal? What makes him a better candidate than Paul Ryan? I'll even throw this one in there. What makes him a better candidate than Jeb Bush? I believe, once again, conservatives are looking before they are leaping. I'm not saying he isn't a good candidate. I'm saying we don't know really very much about him. If you want to weigh in, 406-1360, 888-455-1360. It's 921.
The Jerry Bader Show.